Hi, welcome to For the Love of Weather. This is the podcast where we explore the Earth's atmosphere and how we are all connected through the weather and climate. I'm Gemma.
And I'm Ashling.
We are both meteorologists and weather presenters, and we love chatting about the weather. We hope you enjoy this episode and leave loving the weather just that little bit more, and learn a little something about how the weather and climate can impact our daily lives.
We're really excited to invite Tara Thompson to the podcast. Tara is Communications Manager at National Centre for Earth Observation. She's a communications specialist with a passion for making climate science accessible and bringing facts from experts to the forefront of the discussion. Tara works with world-leading Earth observation scientists to bring trustworthy satellite data of our changing climate to policymakers and the media. What a job! Like, how does that job even happen?
I feel like you've just like absolutely big me up there. So that's fantastic.
Yeah,
I love that
amazing.
Intro. Thank you.
And we know, you know, that we love our satellites on this podcast. But before we get on to chatting about those, Tara, we always just start with that really simple thing. Where did your first little spark of joy come from that you started looking up and thinking, what's going on here? And I'm going to do something in this.
I suppose, I'm sure that it's a very similar answer that you get to people from people most times. But I think I've always had a fascination with weather. Being from the west of Ireland, I think our daily lives are impacted by what you can do and getting out about. I think when I was growing up in the 90s, the weather is very different than to what it is now. But I just remember like being in primary school and sports day and lying out in the grass and looking up at the clouds and thinking like, oh, how are they moving so quickly? Or, you know, that kind of thing, which is quite innocent, I suppose, at the time. And then I'm sure you've heard this answer before, but I wanted to be Helen Hunt. Twister came out. There we go. Gemma thought
me
so.
Me too, me too.
Yeah, I was like, oh my gosh, that looks so exciting. And now actually knowing weather storm chasers, it's like, yeah, maybe I'll do it from the background and have a look and watch you do the scary stuff and I'll just see the amazing footage you can get. But yeah, so, I mean, it's just built on from there. It's never died out, and I just feel really lucky to be able to work in the sector and meet amazing people throughout my career, and I'm here today now with you both. So yeah, thanks for having me on.
And you're probably like us as well, even in the short time frame, although it's starting to get not so short now. It's like 16 years I think we've been working in weather, myself and Gemma together, so you're coming up close to that as well. Like, you know, so much has changed, like in the narrative, in climate, in the push for new satellites. Like, it's actually phenomenal. And I know you would have all read climate papers. We all knew the climate was changing and had a concept of what that could look like, but it's something else to be living through it and actually then suddenly being a little tiny piece of that jigsaw puzzle. So you've got a new groundbreaking satellite called Biomass, and was built in the UK, launched at the end of April. Some really cute, crucial information about the states of our forests and how they are changing. Why do we need that? Tell us everything about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I think that climate change is not a new concept, and it's not a concept that is only impacting us all now. I think we've seen flooding over the last kind of 10 years in the UK. We've seen frosts delayed. We've seen, you know, the climate and weather is changing in our lifetime, and it seems to be getting more extreme every year. I think this week is a great example. I'm sure, Gemma, that you've been doing interviews this week on the heat waves. And I think a baseline for that is, okay, what's the driver behind that? It's greenhouse gas emissions, carbon dioxide and methane being the most kind of potent gases that we're trying to detect and keep an eye on measurements when it comes to satellites and climate change. And from a baseline, we don't understand how important trees are within that story, because the traditional methods we had for measuring the amount of carbon in trees, it is wrong. Before we didn't use LiDAR scanning, we had people on the ground who were measuring bark and, you know, doing it a very old-fashioned way in comparison to the capabilities that we have now today. And Biomass is now going to use a new type of radar system, a P-band radar, the radar itself isn't new, but for the first time will be used on a satellite to measure the canopy of a forest. So you're looking at the wood of a tree, you're looking at the roots, you're looking at the leaves, and measuring exactly how much carbon is stored within those trees. And it's been proven before that LiDAR scanning systems on the ground, you know, have recorded up to twice as much carbon in a tree than we originally thought. So I think by having that information, it just shows how crucial these habitats are for the whole ecosystem, as well as climate change. And I'm just really excited to see the results that come from that. But essentially, what we need is a ground-based level understanding of, right, how much carbon is sequestered by these forests, and equally, how much are they emitting? And biomass is going to be able to tell us that.
That's absolutely amazing. I didn't realize that we knew more from the instruments that we have on land about how much they stored than we did from the satellites. That's so interesting. So, are there certain parts of the trees that store more carbon than others? Are you interested to find out whether that's the case, or do we already know that, say, the bark or the roots store more carbon than the tree canopies?
I'm probably not able to answer that question, but I think that yes, I imagine woody elements of the trees will be taking more carbon than what we originally expected. But there's other elements within a tree that interact with the carbon processes or the carbon cycle. So there's a thing called solar-induced fluorescence that we measure, and it's a proxy for carbon dioxide, and it's essentially measuring that within photosynthesis of a leaf. So there's different elements of a tree. It's not just the whole trees are good for taking in carbon dioxide and emitting oxygen. There's so many complicated systems within that it's just fascinating. I think the more I learn about it, the more I realize how crucial it is to protect the rainforest, and indeed, the kelp forests within the ocean as well. So yeah, it's a really important mission, and it's been ongoing for such a long time. Professor Sean Quegan, who works at the National Centre for Earth Observation, he's been working on it for over 20 years, and it all started with him trying to have the P-band radar legalized to be used on this satellite, because they use it for military, they use it for different satellite systems, not for climate, and this is the first time it's being used. Now, as I said, LIDAR systems on the ground could measure carbon in trees, and Professor Matt Disney has some amazing papers out there. You should look at some of the visualizations he's done on seeing a tree, and it's the carbon within that. It's just, yeah, it's really fascinating.
What's your hope, as a scientist, as just a person, living in this changing climate that wants a slightly better world? What is your hope for, what we're going to get from this? What do you want to get from this? What's your hope that it will sh what's your hope, your take on that it will tell us or help us understand? What would be the thing that would you feel would be the best outcome from these results?
I think for me, the further I go in my career, I think the more I realize that yes, some of the changes we can make at home are really, really important, but it's an international effort. It's a government level effort that we need to make this a priority for not just the UK government, it's governments across the globe. And I think that having that data, that trusted data to say, look how important trees are, or look how important the climate change initiatives we have ongoing are. My hope is that it'll grab more attention. The media kind of I don't know, interest we had around biomass was really helpful in that, because it got, grasped the attention of UK government and equally those across Europe, because it's a European, it's an international mission actually. There's so many other countries involved in it that I just would like it not to be a success story, and what a great story about the innovation that we have in the UK, and the amazing scientists we have across the globe. It's more right, we have the information now, let's act on it. Let's protect the forest. So that's what I'm hoping for.
So I've seen that the satellite was nicknamed Space Brolly because of the huge antennae that it has. If anyone's seen a picture of it, it's awesome. It's got this huge 12-meter diameter antennae. How did that work in terms of the launch? Because it looks like it's quite complicated. Were there any worries before the launch that might not come out as it was supposed to?
I think everyone involved in a satellite mission is worried on the day before launch to make sure that the fueling process went right, to the weather on the day of launch, and then as it goes up, make sure it deploys correctly. But with biomass, we had about 7 days after that waiting for the space brolly, as we call it, to unfold. And it was such a complicated process that scientists at NCO and at ESA couldn't relax until it had fully unfolded. So yeah, it's quite a stressful time, and I think that you go in there with the most kind of positive outlook that everything is going to go so well after 20 years of trying to bring all of this together, and the littlest things can go wrong. And I'm sure if you speak to any mission scientist from the European Space Agency or the UK Space Agency, will say that they're on the edge of their seats until first data comes back. So we're still at that point. I think hopefully I'm at Living Planet Symposium next week, which is the European Space Agency conference, and I think they're hoping to have the first images from biomass to show there. but it'll be a while until the data starts coming back. So I think once we start receiving data, we can relax. I'm pretty relaxed because I think that it's still an exciting story to tell, but I can, you know, there's still an air of tension around, I think.
So you mentioned some of the data that's going to be available. Is that going to be freely available? Will people be able to see like those 3D maps that you've mentioned? Will we be able to like log on and view those?
Yeah, that's the main point of it, is that it'll be open access data for biomass. And I imagine it'll be through the European Space Agency channels that they can provide that information. I want to say about 12 months' time that we should be receiving the data back, but don't hold me to that. But yeah, it's basically meant to be used so that researchers across the globe can use that data for their own specific research into forests and carbon.
So the satellite is launched. What are you doing now? What do you do now? What's next?
Well, we have many satellites up and coming. So, yes, obviously, we're going to still celebrate biomass, and we have many events that we're going to make sure that we can spread the message of biomass around. But in the first week in July, we have MTG launching, which is another European Space Agency backed satellite. And that's more probably weather related. So it's going to look at improving now casting. And we have some of our scientists involved in the sounder, the development of the sounder for that at RAL Space. So we're really excited for that. It's a really busy summer. So we have Microcarb as well, which is a UK space agency and French space agency backed bilateral mission. And that's more looking at a city level focus of carbon dioxide emissions. And it's going to look at SIF. So that's that solar induced fluorescence that I mentioned previously as well. So there's a nice link to biomass with that. And then we have MetUp, which is launching in August. So we have a really busy summer of satellite launches, which is really going to improve our understanding of weather and climate.
What is there a reason they're all launched in the summer, or is these just coincidental that all these projects have kind of like landed together to be released?
No, it's literally whenever you can get onto a free rocket, I think, to get launched. They're actually quite, you know, I don't think it's common knowledge that there's quite a lot of commercial satellites that are launched more frequently than we realize. And I think that the planning process behind that and trying to get onto the right the payload onto the right rocket is really important as well. And I think it's when it comes up to the availability of that is what it's dictated to, rather than saying that the summer is a better time to launch.
So we've covered a few satellites on this podcast, and I'm always amazed by how they've all been like in planning for lots of years. Like the fact that people have to think about these ideas so far in advance. Like you work with these scientists day in, day out. Like they must be amazing people to have like 10 years ago thought we need to be able to look at this and then put that in operation for the next sort of 10 years or so. Like, how do you feel working with these scientists? Like, you must have some really interesting conversations with them at work.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the variety of science disciplines they work in as well. So it's not just, you know, looking at the development of the satellite. They actually use the data. They make the data accessible in the first place. They create the data sets. They then use the data sets to study X, Y, and Z, and they come up with a new paper and a new discovery. They're just amazing. And it's not just people within NCO as well. I've met people across the industry who are just really fascinating and have such a passion for it. And I think that's what I love. Like, you don't talk to anyone who doesn't have an opinion on it. And I think it's the same probably with you guys when you speak to people who work in weather. People, you always have a passion or an interest that drives you, and no one is losing that. And I love to see it. I love to talk to people, and I love to bring their stories out. So yeah, I'm really lucky to work with the people I work with. And I'm just excited to see what's for the future.
I was just going to say that I think it's so exciting that biomass is going up, because I love when there's like a sort of a clear collective effort. Like, I think even I could be wrong. Somebody who's been in climate a lot longer than me might say this is true, but I feel like now the science and climate that's being done now is always being designed with the idea of government in mind as well, like about providing, immediate data so that we can make a bigger change. Where I think maybe 30 years ago there was a lot of science going on. Don't know how whether it was all about, pushing it out externally to a point. So it's quite exciting to see this. There's going to be this whole brand new set of a whole new piece of information to offer up with changing climate.
Well, I don't know about if you agree with me or not, but I just feel like even since I was reading academic papers and stuff at university, that there has been a change across disciplines, science disciplines, on how to present data now. I think there's always an end user in mind of how are they going to use my paper, how are they going to use my data to make a decision, or how is it going to support an initiative? So whether that's health, whether that's climate, whether that is, I don't know, bioengineering, there's always a change of mindset now of, okay, we need to justify the next stage in this research and how we're going to move on to the, you know, how we're going to further this along. And I think that communication has been key in that. And I've seen a real strong improvement in the way that we communicate from a scientist through to policy, through to the public. It's just more accessible these days. Even, you know, I'm talking to my dad about it, and he has literally zero interest usually, but now he does because it's more in the mainstream media about it. But yeah, I think that I've seen a positive change in that respect. It's been good.
You work in
Really good.
communications, so if someone was new to science and communications, like, would you have, let's say, three top tips that you would give them for how to effectively communicate with people and, like, engage them?
Oh, good question. I think to begin with, be interested. Don't come into this industry with no interest in climate or atmospheric science or weather, whatever angle you're coming in from. You're not going to get the story from the scientists unless you are fully invested in what they're trying to do, because they will sense it. And no one wants to waste time because no one has time these days. So yeah, I think definitely come in interested and wanting to listen. That's the first step, gathering the information. I think try and pull out, this is probably just standard communication anyways, but you know, try and pull out the story. Try and pull out why is this important to Joe Bloggs, who's next door, or why is this important to someone to tell the story behind it? And it can be really complicated sometimes, especially with some of the more kind of heavy science papers or information that comes out. One of the things I struggle with, and I'm sure they won't mind me saying, is trying to visualize data assimilation. To people who don't know what data assimilation is quite difficult. But we're still pushing that, and I still enjoy it. And I think be honest, be transparent. We're scientists at the end of the day, and not everything is 100%, and people are going to make mistakes, or there might be, you know, a bias in on some data and not in the others. So I think being very open and honest to that, to say that this isn't a prediction, this is a, you know, this is what the data is telling me at the minute. And I'm sure, as you were both weather forecasters in the past or meteorologists on an operational level, speaking to clients when they're saying, but my forecast was wrong by 0.1 of a degree, you know, that's still being open to say that, you know, at the end of the day, this is our best work and this is what we're presenting to you. So yeah, that was really long-winded. I hope it wasn't too much.
No,
No,
that
it was
was great.
actually
It was
lovely. It was
great.
really nice. Tara, we're going to move on now, and we would like to learn a little bit more about you in a different way that's not got to do with work.
Okay.
So, Demna, do you want to crack on? It's called a get to know me round. So, Tara, we're going to get to know you, and Demna has a few lovely questions put together for you that
Oh.
remarkably people always find an answer to.
I feel nervous now. What are you going to
No,
ask me?
it's
Right, I'm
really
ready. I'm
cool.
ready. I'm
No,
ready.
they're very random. There's like a
Okay.
couple that are weather related, but then the others are just, you'll know, you'll just see they're very, very
Okay.
random.
Are we one answer? Are we one word answers, or are we kind of
But
every 90?
we initially had a one word answer, but you'll very quickly learn from this to get to know me
Okay.
round that there'll be follow up questions, particularly from Ash. He likes to ask a little bit more about why you like certain things.
You know,
Okay.
I'm gonna try and keep it brief, don't worry.
That's okay. That's okay.
It's
That's
my
gonna happen.
interest
It's
in
gonna
the human
happen.
coming out.
Okay, right, let's go. Head down. Let's do this.
Okay, so what is your favorite season?
Autumn. Do you want to say why?
I can see Ash's
Why?
face on the video. She's like, why?
Well, I'm an October baby, and I just love the colors of autumn, and I love that it starts to cool down after a very warm summer these, you know, these recent summers. So yeah, I'm definitely an autumn baby.
We'll give you that.
Yeah.
So we have a rivalry on the podcast. I like autumn. Ash
I'm
likes
spring.
spring.
Okay.
But I have been switching to spring recently. I'm like more of a spring person now than an autumn. But then I talk to someone who likes autumn. I'm like, that's why I love autumn.
Yeah.
That's the
Yeah.
reason. So
Or
why do
as
you
I
choose spring then? What's your
So for me, spring is all about emergence, and I love of an April or a March. You could end up with a beautiful, calm, settled spell of weather where you get to see frost, fog, sunshine. You can drop a layer, drop your scarf, or you could get some snow. Or it has this like multitude of like the whole earth, like it's at its coldest point, so there's that possibility for snow and or some other, you can still have big hailstorms, and then you start to see little tiny pops of convection appearing on a satellite image where you suddenly are like, oh wow, the land's starting to heat up and the physics of it all starts to come to life again. Anyway, I love spring, but I love blossoms, and I love when they blow in the wind, and I just love the gain and the daylight. Normally by the time it comes around, I'm like, I'm so ready to be like recharged by some bright light. And then by the end of January, it's always bright by 5 o'clock, even though I will say this, you probably noticed this too. So I am now living 7 meridians east of where I grew up. I noticed the missing light in the evening. Even on our longest days here, I miss that evening light. And there's something very psychological about that light returning for me, even though I'm 6 meridians east. And at this time of year, I'm like, but it could be brighter for another 45 minutes, but
I
I'm
don't know if you've
really.
done it. I basically FaceTime my mum and it's bright where she is and it's dark
And it's
here.
dark here.
It's
And
mad.
I really, that, so I think when the spring comes around again, there's just this level of, I don't know, I think there's something like, residual from my upbringing of like the light coming back and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah,
Just,
no, I'm actually the complete opposite. I just love the idea of putting layers back on, a really cold, crisp autumn day, and out going for a walk in the park and you just see the trees starting to change color. Yeah. But then I think even further than that, I'd creep into winter if I had to as well. I'm quite, yeah, autumn winter chic. I'm here for it.
Wow.
Sorry.
We can still be pals,
We can be, yeah,
it's
just we just cover all seasons, it's fine.
okay.
We just need to find someone who likes the summer.
it's interesting. I think it's that like psychological thing of people like change. Like there's a, if it's like a marker, or like just if you've had like a bad winter or something's gone on, or you've been sick a couple of times, when you see physically something is changing around you, I think there's something very nourishing about change. So I think that's why spring and autumn are those seasons that come up, because there's like this transition of like, okay, there's these markers, that's one last thing.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite type of cloud?
Yes, I do. Mammatus. I do really like a Mammatus cloud. And I hope in my Irish accent I'm saying that correctly. But I love them. I just think they're amazing.
I saw them for the first time the other week, and I was with my brother, and he was like, "Why are you so excited?" And I was like, "You don't understand what we're seeing over there. I've never seen it in real life." I was taking loads of photos. He's like, "Come on, let's go." I was like, "No, they're incredible. Oh my God, I can't believe we've seen those."
But that's the thing, I don't think that I've ever seen one in person. And that whole kind of fascination behind it and the storms that can follow it and all everything with it is just, yeah, I just think they're spectacular. Yeah, love them. How about you guys?
Also, cumulus floccus.
Okay, that's
So,
great. She knows.
aka jelly ticularis, they look like jellyfish. So, they're medium
Yeah.
level cloud. There's some feist to them, though. And then, they look like little jellyfish dancing across the sky. That would be my favorite cloud visually to look at.
I quite like a Kelvin Helmholtz cloud.
Oh yes, like a wave.
Yeah, they look really cool.
That was
And
that they've been properly branded as well in the last International Cloud Atlas as Fluctus.
oh, okay. Good knowledge. Didn't realize
I am a
that.
mega cloud nerd.
I do. I'm a fan of a lenticular as well. I'm not, it looks like
Yeah.
a little hat. It's quite cute.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a good one as well. We could
But
just talk
yeah.
about clouds all
I
day.
mean, they're all beautiful. I know. It's like everyone's like, "What's your favorite weather?" I'm like, "What kind of my favorite weather? I love everything's my favorite in some way." Anyway, apart from actually maybe a cold wind, that's what makes me miss the cold wind.
Especially if it's a bit drizzly as well.
Oh yeah, like wet rain, wet drizzle. You know when people say that? Oh, it's really wet rain though. It's like,
It's a
isn't it
thing though.
all?
It's the size
Wet.
of the droplets, wet rain. It's a real thing. And if you lived where you grew up as well, it's
There's
a
nothing but wet rain in Galway.
real
That's literally
thing.
your outside. I always like to say that Galway protects the rest of Europe from the Atlantic, so you're welcome.
100%.
You're
There's
welcome either way. Yeah.
nothing like watching a front rolling in the west of Ireland and like seeing the clearance and like the clouds. I don't care what anyone says, I am convinced the clouds along coasts are different. The clouds are different in Ireland, they're different in the west. The beefiness to them, like they're raw, they're totally different, I think. Anyway.
And then you'll, sorry, just on that, with the storms you get is when they're so quick to come in along the coast. But then you'll see Mary and John are still walking the dog along the prom, and you're like, get off the coast, get off the promenade. The waves are huge. But it's like a stubbornness, I think. It's like, no, I've done this every day of my whole life, and it's not, a bit of rain's not going to stop me. I digress.
The resilience of the
Resilience.
coastal people, it really is. Same with Scotland as well.
Yeah.
Sometimes when warnings go out, I'm sure they're like, well, it's just a bit windy.
Yeah, exactly.
If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
Oh, good question. Probably flying because I can't stand traffic. I've got really bad road rage as well. So I'm better off not in a car, but I need to get to places really quickly. So yeah, I'd love to fly.
That would be really good. And then you can fly through the clouds, above the clouds, enjoy them
Yeah.
even more.
Could give people a lift.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my God, I could pay for it as well. It could be like a side business. Do you need a lift from A to B? I can fly. You don't need to sit in traffic. So yeah,
Am
that would be
carbon
mine.
neutral.
And carbon neutral, yeah. I could be solar powered. Yeah. So there we are.
That is a great answer. Okay, this is where it goes a little bit more random. If you were a fruit or vegetable, what would you be?
It's probably like, what would I describe myself? What would I want to be, or what would I describe myself as? I wanted to say kiwi because, like, colorful on the inside and a bit spiky on the outside. I was gonna say hairy, and that would have come off really bad. But you're like, yeah, I can be spiky at times, but really colorful and yeah, fun. I
And
don't
you
know.
get all of your vitamin C needs in a kiwi, so there you go.
Yeah, and
And
yeah.
you can still eat the skin, so you are soft.
I am soft on the inside. That's
Yeah.
exactly.
Yeah.
There we go.
If you could invite one person to dinner, and it can be anybody at all from any historical time frame or even a fictional character, who would you invite?
I mean, he's definitely been said before, but David Attenborough, obviously. Big love for David Attenborough. I've just been watching his recent one that came out on Disney, the ocean one. I just love it. His voice is so soothing.
Is. It is. I got really angry watching that film though.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? Deep sea
Yeah.
trawler clips were really difficult to watch. And I started watching with the kids, and I was like, maybe it's not appropriate before bedtime to start watching this. But yeah, I just think he's fascinating. I'd love to talk to him about all of his life experiences. But yeah.
He would be a great person. He's on my list as well of people I'd love to have at a dinner. Okay, so if you had to choose, would you prefer to go to the beach or the mountains?
Oh, you see, I had both growing up. I was really fortunate in Galway. Beach.
And would you prefer like sort of a beach sort of around Ireland or the UK, or would you prefer like a beach where it was a bit warmer?
No, I want waves. I'm going like either the Devon coast or west coast of Ireland. If I can get out and swim or bodyboard, or I'd try to surf, but I'd probably fail miserably now that I'm a bit older. But yeah, definitely like a more rugged coast, let's just call it.
Substance.
It's that resilience coming out again in the west coast of Ireland.
It is.
But there's something that the coastline around like Ireland and the UK, it is stunning. There are some stunning coastal paths, beaches, like
The west of Ireland is the most beautiful beaches in the whole world. And when the sun shines, my goodness, it is something else.
I agree. Absolutely. But again, you'd have it for an hour and then the rain would come in.
But
But
you're made up for it though, right? Like I spent my summers camping and every year in the rain, and it was a thing that we had to swim every single day, regardless of the weather. Like it's like you're equipped for it. So if the sun
yeah.
does come out and you don't have to change or whatever, it's a beautiful bonus. But otherwise you're still enjoying the weather,
Yeah, and it's kind of like a mentality I'm instilling in my own family as well, because we'll go on down to the Devon coast for half term in October, and there's not many people swimming. But I'm like, come on, it's fine. The wet
It's the warmest
the
time of year to
warmest time of
swim.
year. I was going to say, you get in and it's lovely. And Yeah, rain doesn't, it doesn't matter. It's just you're going to get wet anyways, so it's fine.
It's true. We were talking to someone on the podcast about how we need to sort of change the way people see rain. Like they see rain and they're like, oh, we don't want to go outside, but actually going out and embracing it and seeing how nature or the landscape looks different in the rain and actually really enjoying it in some way. That we're trying to sort of change the way people see it, not be like, oh, it's raining, I don't want to go outside. And not, well, put your raincoat on, go out for a walk. It's
Well,
lovely.
exactly. What do they say? There's no bad weather, just bad preparation.
Yep.
Um, so,
Applause.
mm, so I agree.
And finally, what's one thing that you wish everybody knew about the weather?
Okay, I think a final kind of comment would be that the weather will always get better. There might be a storm at the minute, but there's sunshine behind the clouds.
That's real lovely.
It's so lovely. There
How
we go.
lovely. That got me
What a
there.
lovely way to end
I know. There we
the podcast.
go. I mean,
It's so true.
what else can you say? I was like, what? I don't know what else. I just instead of getting
It's
into
so
negative, I
true. I
thought,
always,
yeah.
brightest stars have to shine in the darkest of skies. It's the same thing. Yeah.
Exactly.
It'll
So
always get better.
it'll always get better. So
Well,
I think, yeah, there we go.
such a lovely little nourishing
We'll
final
all leave
thought.
off
And
crying
actually,
in tears, be like.
thank you so much, Tara, for coming on to chat to us today. We've really enjoyed chatting to you, so thank you so much. If people want to check out a little bit more about some of the satellites that have been launched or they're about to be launched, where's the best place for them to go and find out some of that information?
well, we'll have it on the NCEO website. So that's www.nceo.ac.uk. And there is another website called Space for Climate that has a list about all of the climate satellites being launched as well.
Amazing. And if you have enjoyed this episode, we would love it if you would subscribe, rate, review, share the podcast with a friend. The more people we can get talking about the weather, the better. We want everyone to talk about the weather and love it as much as we do. If you'd like to follow us on social media, you can just search for the Love of Weather. And we hope that you leave this episode loving the weather just that little bit more.
Thanks so much for listening. Bye.